Meeting will now be called to order, please. We'll stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag, and please stand for a moment of silence for Public Works employee Janelle Godinez.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open up for a public comment period. Anyone wishing to make comment on any issue other than that is on our agenda today.
And my concern is I talked to Supervisor or left a message and he got back to me for Supervisor O'Brien is the Tuolumne County project of the rock quarry on Cooperstown Road. I was at the meeting a couple weeks ago and one of the statements that they made was shame on Stanislaus County. Because I guess they've been going through this for a few years now. And their commissioners of the department had stated that no one from Stanislaus County has contacted them or gotten involved. And yet, even though the quarry is in Tuolumne County, Cooperstown Road splits the county. And so, the rock and everything that's coming out of the quarry is going to be coming into Stanislaus County. My concern is that they're not doing a full environmental impact report. They're doing a negative study. They haven't gone down deep enough to make sure that the asbestos that is in other parts of Tuolumne County is not in this area. That rock is going to be coming into Stanislaus County. Myself, I have what the doctors call severe life-threatening asthma. I live not far from the railroad tracks. Their response when I talked to them was that they would wet down the rock, you know, so that it wasn't as pollutant. But when it's 106 or 110 out in the Stanislaus County and there's winds during the summer, that's not going to help for very long. They have not looked at the amount of traffic it'll cause. They're going to be at changing gears in Riverbank at the railroad yard there. We've already had one fatality with multiple fatalities with one accident there. And I just think it needs to be looked at by this committee and getting in contact with them and letting them know the concerns that we have. They're having a meeting this evening, but because they're waiting for someone from Stanislaus County to contact them, they are not going to have this on their agenda tonight. They're waiting until March 15th. And I think it would be prudent for someone to contact them and really look at this project before it goes forth.
Thank you. And your name is Nancy Hinton?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I will be at that Board of Supervisors meeting on March 15th. They delayed it and continued it until March 15th. I have responses coming from City of Oakdale, City of Riverbank, San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, as well as Stanislaus County.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Okay, we will now go into the consent calendar. We are pulling B7, and B4 will be pulled for comment, and I believe Monica or have some comments on that, please.
Good Good morning, Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doering. I'm Monica Nino from the Chief Executive Office. I'm requesting your approval today to renew the county agreements for indigent defense for legal services with Grusay, Orenstein and Hurdle, and Perry and Associates. The county has an obligation to provide indigent defense services for those persons found to be indigent by the courts. The county has effectively managed those costs for indigent services by keeping the majority of those cases within the public defender's office and these two conflict firms where the total cost is fixed. Both contracts are scheduled to expire on June 30 of 2011. These contracts cover the cost of both professional legal and investigative services for indigent clients that the public defender's office is unable to represent due to a conflict of interest. Both conflict firms have complied with their existing contracts to represent indigent clients. They have also been excellent partners with the county's public defender when there have been conflicts with multiple defendant cases. Prior to approaching both conflict firms on a contract renewal, the Chief Executive Office inquired with Superior Court on any feedback on the services being provided by these firms for both criminal and dependency cases, and the courts have expressed satisfaction with both firms. The funds that pay for indigent defense costs come from the county's general fund. During negotiations, the county shared with the conflict firms the budget reductions our public safety departments are projected to face in budget year 2011-2012. Having that understanding, the county presented a 10% reduction to these conflict firms in each of the three in each of their contracts effective July 1 of 2011 for a total annual savings of $139,581 to remain in effect for the following 2 years through June 30, 2014. Both firms have tentatively agreed to this contract reduction contingent upon the Board of Supervisors' approval today. There is one staff recommendation before you today, and it includes to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to finalize and execute the agreement for the period of July 1st, 2011 through June 30th, 2014 with the law firm of Grusay, Orenstein and Hurdle and the law firm of Perry and Associates for the continued provision of legal representation of indigents with the public when the public defender is unable to represent due to a conflict of interest. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available to respond to any questions along with our public defenders in the audience, and both Mr. Hurdle and Ms. Hurdle and Mr. Orenstein and Mr. Perry are both in the audience.
Any comments by the board? Or
I'd just like to, you know, I asked Monica to talk about this today, and I just want to point out that the reason we're talking about this is that we're not only cutting to make this apparent to everybody that we're not only cutting county services, county staff, that we're actually looking very hard at our vendors and people to provide services to us besides staff and doing the cuts that we have to do to help everything here. So anyway, I appreciate you. Not a big deal, I know, but I just thought it was good to make it public so everybody can see just how hard you guys are working at trying to cut things and make this work. So thanks, Monica.
Thank you.
We have pulled the B7. We brought back in B4. Is there any comments, or does anyone wish to make a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second. Approved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's been passed. Now I'd like to go to schedule item 6 for the 905 scheduled matters. And I believe Matt Machado has some comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doering, Matt Machado, your Public Works Director. With me this morning is Mike Wilson of our engineering group. He manages our special districts. And we have scheduled this morning a public hearing to consider changes in methodology for calculating assessments and to conduct an assessment ballot procedure in compliance with Prop 218 for the North McHenry No. 1 Lighting District. And with that, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Mr. Wilson for a staff report.
Good morning. The North McHenry No. 1 Lighting District was formed in 1987 to finance the ongoing operation and maintenance of streetlights within the district. Out of 27 lighting districts it remains the only lighting district to operate without an assessment formula. An assessment formula would allow assessments to increase or decrease each year by adjusting to variations in expenses and fund balances. Currently, revenue is fixed at $30.44 per parcel, while expenses continue to surpass revenue and leave the district with a growing negative fund balance. Prior to any change in a special district's assessment methodology, an assessment ballot procedure and public hearing are required by the State of California Constitution, Article 13D, otherwise known as Proposition 218. The deadline to submit or change an assessment ballot is the conclusion of this public hearing. Owners of parcels within the boundary of North McHenry No. 1 Lighting District have until the conclusion of this public hearing to submit or change their ballots. They may do so at the back of this room where a representative from Public Works is available to assist them. We ask that the board approve the following five staff recommendations. Number one, find that the requirements for a notice of this public hearing were given pursuant to California Government Code Section 53753B and the Highway Lighting District Act Code Sections 19051 and 19052. Recommendation number two, approve the revised engineer's report and make it a part of this proceeding. Recommendation number three, conduct a public hearing to receive comments regarding the proposed methodology for calculating the annual assessments and the levy of the annual assessment to pay for the lighting services. Recommendation number five, number four, find that the California Constitution Article 13D Proposition 218 requirements for public hearing and assessment ballot procedure have been completed upon closure of this public hearing. And number five, authorize the clerk of the board to oversee the opening of the sealed ballots and to count and submit the results of the board to the Board of Supervisors at the next scheduled board meeting on March 8, 2011. Chairman Monteith, the clerk of the board, requested that I announce that the assessment ballots for this proposal have remained sealed and will be open and tabulated in public view today, March 1st at 2 p.m. in Conference Room 6502 of this building, located at 1010 10th Street here in Modesto, California. This action is in accordance with Section 53753E of the Government Code. Chairman Monteith, at this time, I'm ready to respond to any questions the board may have of staff.
Any questions by the board? If not, I'll open it to the public. Anyone in the audience which may have a question on this subject? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. And if someone would make a motion, we'll go from there.
Motion to approve all staff five recommendations.
There a second?
I will second it.
Seconded. Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? It has been passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
We now will go back to B-12, which Mr. Robinson, I believe, is
yes, I'll lead on off the subject. This. If it's just a moment, we will get our PowerPoint presentation up. Staff is getting that up, I would like to acknowledge some people who have put in substantial work hours, hours during and after work to prepare this mid-year budget report. Assistant Executive Officers Patty Hill Thomas, Monica Nino, and Stan Ryson, who lead this effort. Staff support Christina Alfaro, Christy Allman, Marnie Artis, Tara Shumley, Doris Foster, Kelly Gomes, Cindy Thomason, Brenda Kiley, Jim Quartz, Mark Loser, Raul Mendez, and Sandy Regalo. I'd also like to acknowledge the departments who worked so collaboratively and closely with the CEO's office as we developed this mid-year budget proposal. this year, as we begin the mid-year budget, we want to start with a focus on where we have been as an organization and to look forward strategically at what we may be able to accomplish moving forward, looking both at some of the successes we've had over the past 2 years and some of the challenges that will be facing us in the time ahead. I would like to indicate we've had some questions of departments at different times over the last year whether this quarterly budget review was really the best use of their department staff time and our CEO time. It is my very, very strong belief that the development of the quarterly and mid-year budgets are critical to the long-term success of this organization, and that without these periodic check-ins and adjustments necessary, we would not be in the position we are in today. We would not be able to respond timely to emerging issues that face and challenge us on a day-to-day basis and year in and year out. So you have my very, very strong support for this continued process of a quarterly check-in with a major mid-year review. I want to provide to you, and a little of this will be redundant as we go through, but it's so critical. I was thinking as I was developing a few notes around what I want to talk about, which is where we've been and where I think we should go between now and 2015, that this is perhaps the most important message that I will share with you in the balance of my career in Stanislaus County. And it is because if you accept the premises that we are going to outline to you, and the challenges, both those that we have overcome and those that are still before us, you'll recognize the value in planning and in preparing for the changes that must occur in Stanislaus County government for us to be successful. Once again, I'm very grateful, and I would say particularly to assistant executive officers and deputies who have worked so diligently over the last 12 months to develop a 2011-12 through 2014-15 budget strategy. In March of 2009, we sat down with the Board of Supervisors and outlined a program that built the use of $24 million in reserves into our next 3 years' general fund operating budget. That began in the 9-10, continues in 10-11, and the final $8 million of that initial $24 million is anticipated to be allocated to the 2011-12 budget. Our expectation in doing this was that the use of the funding would soften the impact on programs and services by allowing us to implement program reductions over multiple years, also allow the county to refine and adjust to our program, our minimum program mandates. One of the challenges we have is actually identifying first and then defining what minimum level of services are required under certain types of mandates, because not all mandates are well defined. Would allow us to adjust county operations to a new permanent lower level of discretionary revenue and work with displaced workers whenever feasible to place them in vacant non-general funded positions. One of our underlying objectives was to find a way to the greatest extent possible not contribute to the greater unemployment that we are facing as a community and as a region. And this was one of the strategies that we had outlined, and I would say have been pretty successful in administering. From that time, we've continued to reduce programs and services. We've cut allocated positions by about 1,000 in that period of time. We've implemented non-enhanced retirement benefits for new hires effective January 1, 2011, and I dare say we are the first county of which I'm aware, the first public agency of which I'm aware in California, to fully implement non-enhanced retirement benefits in our county workforce. And we've implemented furloughs countywide for two fiscal years for 2010-11 and 2011-12. Adjusted budgets to absorb an expected $14 million general fund increase in retirement contributions to Stansera and adjusted to the $36 million in discretionary revenue losses. I want to say that again, $36 million in discretionary revenue losses since to the 2007-2008 fiscal year. We'll step through the slides as I go through it. Even with the changes and reductions, we're still projecting an overall $28 million general fund shortfall in 2011-12. After applying the $8 million that the board has authorized, that still leaves our shortfall in 11-12 at $20 million. And that shortfall we define as the difference between net county cost and discretionary funding to support the general fund programs. The shortfall is composed of both cost increases, principally retirement cost increases, and discretionary revenue losses. Illustrating the challenges we reported to you in the first quarter budget report, even with an increased net county cost allocation in 2011-12, in all of our public safety programs, each will likely lose staff. In fact, the sheriff's already taken steps to adjust his budget to address the reality of our 2011-12 and 2012-13 budget circumstances. Today, we'll be asking that you continue the strategy that's currently in place and authorize the use of an additional $18.4 million in one-time TEDR reserves. TEDR reserves are established by the county as part of a requirement when we fund a special program we have that allows us to allocate 100% of the property taxes to all of the taxing jurisdictions in Stanislaus County, even though we haven't yet received 100% of that revenue because sometimes that revenue is delinquent. What we have done through 2006 is we've had to increase that reserve because property values were going up substantially. As property taxes have come back down again, the reserve is now at a level higher than that required under California law, and that frees up just over $18 million to use for other purposes. I'm proposing that we use this one-time funding source out into 2014-15 fiscal year to bridge a gap that I'll speak to in just a couple minutes. Allocating the reserves over the next 3 years will allow the county to pay off its outstanding balance in the county's pension obligation bond debt, reallocate the funds that have been used for many years to pay POB debt service obligations to ongoing county operations, and permanently save $6.2 million in discretionary general fund resources to use for critical county services. And as I've talked to you about on several occasions over the last 6 months, we have 3 years of debt obligation remaining in our pension obligation bond. At the conclusion of the payment of our pension obligation bond obligations, we will free up about $6 million in discretionary general fund revenue. So our challenge is to find a way to bridge the gap between 2011-12, July 1, 2011-12, and the 2014 fiscal year when those discretionary resources will once more become available to fund operations. My proposal to you is that we use the $18 million to bridge that gap between now and 2014-15. That essentially will save $6.2 million in cuts in each of the next 3 years. And we'll put in place a permanent funding source that will replace what otherwise have been that $6.2 million in cuts. As we go forward, we know that we'll see additional cuts in program areas. We know that we'll see additional staffing reductions in layoffs, through attrition, and through other forms. We also realize that we're moving towards a sustainable long-term budget solution. One of the goals that we set forth in 2009 was to develop for you, our Board of Supervisors, and for the residents of this community, a budget strategy that would, at its conclusion, result in a balanced and sustainable county budget. Redefined would allow us to operate our county general fund within the discretionary funding sources that we have available. And we're moving down that path. As you know, we continue to have unprecedented challenges in our failed economic recovery in this entire region. We continue to have economic challenges in increased pension costs through Stancera. However, we've identified, we've acknowledged, we've accepted the fact that those exist, and we're finding ways to work around those challenges and provide to you at the conclusion of our long-term strategy what we believe will be a sustainable platform. The the slides that we have before you actually say a lot of what I was going to say, but I felt it was really important that I speak to you from what I think is a more visceral level, because we've lived with these challenges for so long. I didn't simply want to read through the slides. We'll go through them real quickly to summarize just a couple points. We're using the final $8 million of the $24 million in the 2011-12 fiscal year. That brings down from 28 to 20 million the shortfall that we will continue to need to address for 2011-12. We're proposing the use of 18.4 million in TEDR reserves, which have been freed up because of a bad thing, because property values have gone down. And we're proposing that we use that in 2011-12 or 2012-13, depending on whether the request that we're submitting to Stancera for about $12 million of assistance, half of which would attribute to the general fund and half of it would go to other county funds to mitigate the retirement cost increase for 2011-12. If we're successful in that request, that will allow us to take that $18 million, roll it out one additional year to 2012-13 and 2013-14, and allow us to further soften the blow that we would otherwise face. We have presented to you, our 2011-12 does include the continuation of the 5% across the board reductions, the furloughs, through budget year 2011-12. We have continued to strictly and stringently enforce the no backfill policy for our state budget reductions, and the program incentives that we have built into our county budget strategy includes an authorization for general fund departments to carry over 75% of their net cost county cost savings for the 2010-11 fiscal year ending June 30th, 2011, and 100% of remaining fund balance carried over. And as you'll recall, that started it at 75%. So it's 100% of the 75% or whatever they haven't spent in 2011, whichever is less. We will continue to identify minimum mandated match funding exposures and fund to those levels. Discretionary programs for potential elimination of county funding. We have year over year worked collaboratively with this board to identify those discretionary programs that are most important to you and have found resources to continue to support those. And we've issued targeted reductions, something we brought to you in October, of up to 30% for non-public safety programs and up to 17% for public safety programs as a result of our unprecedented, as I indicated to you, over $36 million discretionary revenue losses. This chart outlines the strategy going forward from 11-12 through 14-15 that we're proposing. You'll note in the top half, the cash flow analysis anticipates the Stancera contribution and the use of that contribution in 11-12 with an increased TEDR assignment or a buy down of the deficit in 12-13 and 13-14, yielding a balanced county budget in 2014. I would say balanced and sustainable county budget, because our objective as we go forward is to make sure that our discretionary funding and our net county cost are equivalent. The second half, the lower half of the chart, again from 11-12 through 2014-15, is what we believe should happen if Stancera does not provide the offset in 2011-12, and that would allocate the teeter reserves over a three-year period rather than over a two-year period, so the impact would be lesser in the out years in particular. It's a daunting task, but one that we believe can be navigated if we put in place an appropriate roadmap to allow us to get to 2014-15. Our request in this budget, in addition to supporting and approving the mid-year proposal we're going to make, is that you approve our strategy forward through 2014-15.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Monica Nino from the Chief Executive Office. I'll be going through the mid-year goals along with the individual departmental requests that are presented to you today as part of our mid-year fiscal update. Our mid-year goals is to determine the fiscal performance of the county budget for the first 6 months of this fiscal year, identify any outstanding budget issues, along with making any adjustments to end the fiscal year in a positive financial position, and to look ahead for the coming into the coming fiscal years. Our mid-year report before you today is organized within the board's 7 board priorities: a safe community, a healthy community, a strong local economy, effective partnerships, a strong agricultural economy and heritage, a well-planned infrastructure system, and efficient delivery of public services. The final budget the board approved in September of 2010 totaled over $918 million. Total appropriations of approximately $145 million within our Safe Community Board priority is the board's priority that has the greatest level of general fund dollars, which are primarily funded through those discretionary revenue dollars that have unfortunately been dwindling quite dramatically these last 3 years. Total appropriation, our largest board priority is within our healthy community. That priority was approved at over almost $450 million. This budget unit primarily funds our behavioral health and recovery services, our health services agency, along with our community services program, and that budget is primarily funded through state and federal dollars. Overall, our mid-year adjustments were not sizable. We are recommending before you today a total increase in our adjusted budget of over $1 million. We are recommending increased departmental revenue of over $665,000 and the use of additional retained earnings of over $410,000. We do have one recommended transfer from appropriations for contingencies, and that is to fund our grand jury fees of a little over $3,973. This transfer from appropriations for contingencies does require a 4/5 vote of this Board of Supervisors. Upon the board's consideration of that transfer from contingencies, it will leave a balance of $4.6 million in our appropriation for contingency fund to get us through the remainder of this fiscal year. At mid-year, year-end projections for discretionary revenue are estimated at $144.2 million. That's slightly a little over a $200,000 increase from what the board approved in September of 2010. I want to remind you, when we did present discretionary revenue to the board as part of the final budget in September, we did recommend a reduction to it of a little over $2 million, and you'll see that before you. And from our actuals from 2009-2010, it was a little over $40 million, but in 2009-2010 was the year when we had to transfer $7.9 million in local property tax dollars to the state of California. The following discussion will summarize overall the adjustments that are being recommended as part of the financial report. The first board priority I will be presenting will be a safe community. We are recommending an increase in appropriations of over $379,000 and an estimated revenue increase of $362,000, along with the increase for our grand jury fees and the use of fund balance of approximately $112,000. The first one is for our district attorney. We are recommending an increase in 2 of their programs for their auto insurance fraud, along with their real estate fraud fees of over $77,000. And I've already mentioned the grand jury fees for probation. They have a new grant from the State Office of Traffic Safety, and we are recommending an increase in probation of $30,000. For the sheriff, the city of Houston, this is within our contract city's budget. There is no additional general fund dollars here, and this is for a supplemental law enforcement services fund of over $136,000 for the city of Houston. For the public defender, we are recommending another transfer of $50,000 from the Indigent Defense Fund to fund the department's shortfall in the public defender budget. This will be the second transfer this board will be considering. The board did consider a transfer as part of first quarter in meeting the public defender's budget shortfall for the current fiscal year. So upon the board's decision on this transfer, that will bring the total transfer from Indigent Defense of $100,000. We are seeing that the current Indigent Defense Fund is experiencing a savings. There have been a number of cases that have been resolved, and so we aren't seeing the amount of expenses, but that is based upon our mid-year projections. If we see that that has changed in that budget, were to go back into a deficit, we would be looking back at the public defender to carry over any shortfall as a result if it does occur in the Indigent Defense Fund. We are also recommending an increase to the Indigent Defense Fund to be funded from some reserves that were set aside by this board as part of the 2009-2010 final budget, which was established for the change of venue that dealt with a local high-profile murder case, which has been resolved. And so we are recommending authority to transfer up to $112,633 from those reserve funds to offset those change of venue costs. For a healthy community, we are recommending overall, this is where the largest reduction is occurring overall within the board priorities. We are recommending a reduction in appropriations of over $2 million and a reduction in estimated revenue of $2.5 million, funded by additional fund balance and retained earnings of $511,000. The first one is an increase for our Area Agency on Aging and Veteran Services, as a result of additional grant funds from the Federal Older Americans Act for senior services and programs. For behavioral health and recovery services, we are recommending an increase in appropriations of over $382,000 for their Children's Systems of Care program. For also, we are recommending a transfer of mandated county match, which is funded through the general fund. These funds are coming from our community services agencies. Mandated county match to behavioral health and recovery services for our seriously emotionally disturbed program of over $224,404. For child support services, we are recommending an increase as a result of a state IT project of over $6,000. We are recommending significant reductions in our community services agency for our child care caseload reductions of over $2.9 million in appropriations. For our health services agency, we're recommending an increase as a result of revenues in from our MATI funds to fund payments to hospitals and physicians for uncompensated emergency medical services. For a strong local economy, we are recommending overall an increase in appropriations of $2.1 million and estimated revenue of $2.4 million, resulting in a reduction in the use of fund balance and retained earnings of $303,000. The largest increase of that appropriation increase is primarily recommended in our Alliance WorkNet, which is as a result of state and federal new dollars for our CalWORKs Welfare to Work program. Those dollars are typically transferred to our community services agency. That's approximately $1.9 million increase. We are recommending an increase to offset some salary costs in our library, but they did have some increase in their prior year sales tax revenues, so we are increasing their revenue by over $502,000. For a strong agricultural economy and heritage, our Ag Commissioner has received some additional state funds for pest trapping of over $58,000, so we are recommending an increase in that budget. For a well-planned infrastructure, we are recommending an increase in appropriations of $589,000 and an estimated revenue of $499,000 and the use of additional fund balance of $90,000. The first one is transferring funds from our redevelopment agency funds for rehabilitation and a down payment and administrative services for our housing fund of over $499,000. The next one is for Public Works. We are recommending the purchase of a ground biofuel tank at Morgan Shop, and that is $90,000, and they plan to use their departmental retained earnings to fund that. For Environmental Resources, this will be the first four of a total of 16 reductions in force we will be presenting to you today. Those four positions will be occurring in our code enforcement division. In efficient delivery of public services, this is where our appropriations for contingency fund is, and so that transfer based upon the board's approval of that recommended transfer would take place in that budget unit, along with our mandated match transfers between Community Services Agency and our Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. And we are recommending a transfer between budget units within our General Services Agency for a cash out that, as a result of our 75% carryover, we are no longer bringing cash outs to this board, since general fund departments have the ability to carry over any net county cost savings to the level of the 75%. We do expect them to cover those types of expenditure, and GSA is doing that by transferring some of their savings from purchasing over to their administration budget. The staffing recommendations that we have before you today total a reduction of 74. The first is those 16 reductions in force. 10 of them are in our General Services Agency, which are occurring in our facilities maintenance, primarily among our maintenance engineers and our janitorial staff. We do have those four in our code enforcement budget, along with we have two in our Chief Executive Office Operations and Services for a total of 16. We do have 53 unfunded vacant positions, along with the restoration of four unfunded positions and the deletion of nine vacant positions for a total of 74, bringing our recommended authorized positions down to 3,616. The table before you lists a number of reclassifications recommended as part of the mid-year report. Departments request reclassifications when duties of the positions are no longer reflect the employee's current classification, or the employee is underfilling a position at a lower level. The recommendations include a study of a staff services analyst. The reclassification also includes the upward of five positions and the downgrade of 11 positions. Employees who have positions adjusted will receive an increase or a decrease in salary to the new classification level. The following chart illustrates some staffing trends. After the implementation of the recommendations before you today, we are recommending the allocated positions to come down to 3,616. This is comparable to the number of positions allocated for the county back 15 years ago in 1996-97. Actual changes in staffing. Since the final budget of 2008-2009, just two fiscal years ago, a number of departments have experienced significant drops in the number of employees in the workforce. While staffing levels may fluctuate based on turnover and hiring, currently 10 county departments have experienced decreases in staffing of over 18% as a result of attrition or reductions of force that have come before this Board of Supervisors. The most significant decreases have occurred in Cooperative Extension with a 40% decrease, our General Services Agency with a 39% decrease in staff. Parks and Recreation, Planning and Community Development have all experienced almost a 30% decrease in staffing. The Sheriff's Department has also experienced a significant decrease at a level of 21% decline in staffing. Three departments have also seen a 19% drop in staffing: the Chief Executive Office, the Clerk Recorder, Library, and Child Support. Unfortunately, county departments will continue to experience these decreases as we continue to prepare for the proposed budget for 2011-2012. Ms. Hill-Thomas will be going over the exposures.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring, Patty Hill-Thomas with the Executive Office. I would like to echo Mr. Robinson's thanks to the CEO leadership team, our budget team, every county department head, their leadership team, and their employees for working together through very troubling and difficult times. Clearly, your board has directed us to engage in a budget process and focus that ensures that we don't deficit spend. And before you today are another series of recommendations to balance our declining revenue with our expenditure and program obligations in accordance with your board's priorities. Despite the focus of our organization, many of the decisions made both in Sacramento and Washington, D.C., by the state and federal government have tremendous impact on the types of programs and services in our community. Much of our county budget is devoted to mandated programs, where it is very specific where each dollar of discretionary revenue is required to be spent to match particularly aid and health and welfare programs. Beyond that, that decline in revenue that both Mr. Robinson spoke of and your board has been well aware of and passionate about trying to protect in Sacramento comes at the loss and threat to local programs where there is discretion. Our focus on the local budget has to include being engaged, as you are, and our community being engaged and our organization being engaged in the decisions made by the legislature and the Congress, the governor, and the president, because those programs have the greatest impact to continue to threaten the fiscal stability we talked to you about again today. In the California state budget, estimated somewhere today at over $25 billion short difference in the revenues and expenditures in our state funding plan, there are many proposals, many realignments, and many issues that have not been resolved by our legislature and our governor. There are some that are dramatically and devastatingly directed at county government programs. The first I'd like to mention is the potential loss of the vehicle license fees, a devastating loss, over $4 million if indeed the governor's proposal to extend these fees an additional 5 years at a special election in June is not considered. That loss, those funds go directly to our county public safety programs, sheriff, district attorney, probation. That decision by the legislature and the governor is something that's debated day and night in Sacramento, as you well know. The clerk recorder's office anticipates that special election cost could cost the county $600,000 that we currently have, do not have budget in our county budget. There are a number of mandated programs that are being considered to be eliminated, but regrettably, there was a significant mandated program that provides for seriously emotionally disturbed children where the mandate was lifted, but the legal challenge remains. And in this budget recommendation that we've already shared with you, it is our recommendation that we must continue to fund the residential cost, estimated at $250,000 a year, for these seriously emotionally disturbed youth until there's a clear legal decision about what the county's obligation is. There is the continued loss of funding for Williamson Act. Your board has considered that as a policy matter in the fall of last year. That $1.3 million is the county, Stanislaus County share of Williamson Act, not included in the budget again. That provides us an additional discretionary revenue loss that is significant. The exposures abound, and we're only going to talk about a few this morning. The in-home supportive services program, as your board knows, has been the fastest growing program from a cost perspective to the county's general fund over the last 4 years. That significant exposure is subject to some very important legislative changes that are being considered in Sacramento and a balance of our own needs and our community and a continued focus on ensuring that that program is operated to only the people who need it and that we ensure that program integrity at a local level through our fraud program. The medically indigent adult program continues to present an exposure yet unbudgeted in the current fiscal year of over $2.3 million. Those medically indigent adults who have nowhere else to go for health insurance coverage are the responsibility by law of county governments in California. And in that regard, your board will consider in the coming weeks setting a Bielanson hearing to accept or to consider recommended changes in how medically indigent adults have access to health care in Stanislaus County. You'll also recall that this matter is subject to ongoing litigation, so we'll be discussing that with you in the coming weeks. And by the third quarter of this current fiscal year, we'll bring you a recommendation to adjust the budget because this program continues to operate at a greater level than our current budget allows. Excuse me. In terms of the continuing growth in needs in our community for those who have nowhere else to go, we have more than one in four people in Stanislaus County on public aid. Those caseload growth numbers continue to be realized in CalWORKs, foster care, adoptions assistance, and in general assistance, which, like the medically indigent adult program on the healthcare side, is the last resort for cash assistance for individuals who have nowhere else to go and is a county general fund obligation in the state of California. That mandated match exposure we look forward to could be greater than $2.5 million in the next fiscal year, and the increase in general assistance alone could be over $1.2 million more than it is today by the 12-13 fiscal year. Our budget reporting is comprehensive. It is quarterly to your board in public, and this schedule lays out the remainder of this year as our departments are already working hard on their proposed budget submissions. Those will be in the chief executive office on April 11th, although we're working on them already as we speak. On May the 3rd, we will bring to you publicly again our third quarter fiscal report, much like the mid-year report you are considering today. On May 27th, the proposed budget will be available to the public for their viewing. On June the 7th, we're going to recommend that you conduct proposed budget hearings, including the dates of June 8th and 9th if needed. And finally, looking ahead to the final budget, we're going to ask you to consider a final budget hearing on the 13th of September 2011. As a part of our labor agreements and our budget work, we are recommending to you today the remainder of the fiscal year for the 2011-2012 year for office closures. The office closures are a direct result of our 5% salary deduction and the furlough days in place. As your board may be aware or is aware, we have a number of general office closure dates that are described on this slide, and we have some alternative closure dates for departments that work directly, for example, with the courts. That would include the district attorney, public defender, and clerk recorder. For our public works, risk management, sheriff, SBT, and our treasurer, and DER and parks to close on various days. And of course, there are exceptions to the closures. Our 24-hour-a-day, 7-day operations do not close during these furlough closure days. Before you this morning are a number of recommendations to adjust the current year budget in accordance with the recommendations in this mid-year report, and I'd like to review those recommendations with you specifically. Our first recommendation is to ask you to accept our mid-year fiscal report for 2010-11, to secondly authorize the chief executive officer and the auditor to make the necessary adjustments as recommended. Our third recommendation is to authorize the use of $3,973 in the appropriation for contingency as recommended for the grand jury budget. Direct the auditor controller to release funds committed in the fund balance as described in the report and reclassify as unassigned these funds to be used by the public defender's office. To direct the chief executive officer to implement the budget reduction strategy for the proposed budget for fiscal year 2011-12 and continuing through budget year 2014-15 as recommended today. To amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect all of the recommendations in this mid-year report outlined specifically in the staffing impact section, all of those to be effective the start of the March 12, 2011 pay period. regrettably to approve the reduction force of 10 filled positions in the General Services Agency budget and in the Chief Executive Office budget with an effective date of those reductions in force of April 23, 2011. To approve the reduction force of 4 filled positions in the Environmental Resources budget effective July 2, 2011. To approve all of the contracts and agreements that are listed again for you today on Attachment B in our regular reporting effort on all of the cumulative contract work that the county does with vendors and professionals, all of which exceed $100,000 or greater since starting in July 1, 2003. To approve the Chief Executive Officer's countywide closure schedule that I reviewed with you a moment ago and are included in Attachment D in your report. And to approve the office closures for the Clerk Recorder, District Attorney, Public Defender on October 10th, February 13th, 2012, March 30th, 2012, to coincide with the court holidays. And just to be clear, we added a 12th recommendation. I covered it earlier, but we weren't clear in our written document. The effective date and downward reclassifications in our own department, the Chief Executive Office, have an effective date of April 23, 2011. Mr. Chairman and members of the board and to the public, the county budget, this report, and the detail that backs it up is on the county's website. This slide shows where you can go to access the detail of all of our fiscal work analysis and reports that we've produced. On behalf of the county's budget team, we are all available to answer any questions that you may have.
I would like to make one quick clarification, if I can. The information was dead on accurate, but I'll give you a slightly more detailed breakdown on the 136,000 adjustments to contract cities. 30,000 goes to Riverbank for an Office of Traffic Safety Traffic Enforcement grant. $100,000 to the City of Houston for supplemental law enforcement grant, $1,528 to the City of Waterford, again Office of Traffic Safety Clicket or Ticket grant, but that's the specific breakdown relative to that 136.
Does any other member have any questions or concerns? Ask at this time.
Jim? Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question about the retirement contribution. In the Stancera, do you know how much of an increase there's going to be in the county's part this year? Have you got the new figures yet, or are you just running on estimates?
We're still running on estimates. We had built into our budget forecasting model 75%. We think that the number will be down a little bit from that, but the distribution between safety and non-safety membership is still up in the air, and we don't know whether one side will come in at the 75% and another side lighter than that. So we're going with our original estimates as the best information we still have available to us.
Supervisor O'Brien.
Yeah, I have some questions on the code enforcement reduction of force. How many employees will be left in that unit now?
We're going to ask Sonia to come forward to describe that to you.
Good morning, Sonia Herigfeld, Director of Environmental Resources. We'll have one a vehicle abatement officer. We'll have a total of 4 positions left. They do. We will have one full-time position as a code enforcement officer doing what is traditionally code enforcement work, but we have graffiti abatement is also a code enforcement officer. AVA is also a code enforcement officer. So, but we'll have 3 positions left. Thank you. We're eliminating 4, so we'll have 3 positions left.
3 positions left. ABA is funded by the revenues obtained on that?
Yeah, that funding is a direct pass-through from StanCog.
Okay. General fund contribution for that is still $232,000, so I want to understand what we are getting for that amount. Did we look at, you know, we're eliminating code enforcement officers and going to ask, from what I can tell from the staff report,
some of our other employees to pick up some of those duties. Did we look at the possibility of keeping some of the code enforcement officers and have them pick up some inspector duties? It just seems like code enforcement is the one on the chopping block and being targeted.
That's correct. Code enforcement is a general fund. We do not generate any revenue associated with code enforcement officers specifically to code enforcement. We have, when code enforcement came over to the Department of Environmental Resources, it came over with two full-time positions. When abandoned vehicles came over, it was also considered a code enforcement officer, and it came over with one full-time position. And when we got AVA came over, and it was one full-time position and one part-time position, and it was the general fund contributed a portion of the funding associated with AVA. That apportionment of funding associated with AVA has been eliminated. We get zero general fund contribution for the AVA program. It's 100% of what's passed through from STANCOG. On the graffiti abatement, each year we've been taking a reduction, you know, a percentage reduction in that, which basically leaves us with probably about enough funding specifically designated for the graffiti abatement at about 80% of a full-time position, which then in turn leaves about $166,000 for the code enforcement unit, which pays for about one full-time position.
$166,000?
Yeah, a little bit. It pays for a little more than a full-time position, which is why we're going to distribute some of those responsibilities kind of across the board. We've set up, when the complaints come in, we're going to handle those complaints through our staff that are typically out in the field during the day. If it is a confirmed complaint that will lead to a code enforcement case, that will be referred to our remaining code enforcement officer. So we'll have one code enforcement person who will be handling all of the true code enforcement complaints in the county.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions or concerns?
I had an additional question.
Yeah.
That's still going back to the retirement. The way I read the report is that the only way this is even going to work is if we get $6.2 million from Stan Serra from the unallocated reserves in that.
No, we've actually provided an option A.
That's why I saw that in there, and I wasn't sure.
And so we have... We didn't want to put all of our eggs in a basket when there were options. The option that does not include the Stan Serra mitigation increases the cuts in 2012-13 and 2014. 2012-13 and 13-14. And so that contribution will make a really big difference to us. But we have developed a plan around a scenario in which we do receive the Stan Serra contribution and a scenario in which we do not.
And yeah, I can see that because this was new information. Have you asked Stan Serra for that?
We have a letter going to them this week.
Okay, otherwise it'll just be continued additional layoffs then if they don't provide that from the unallocated reserves.
Yeah, it will have an adverse impact on our overall budget planning process.
But even with this contribution from them, should it come, I mean, we still are contributing substantially more into the retirement system.
Yes, we are, and that to a significant degree is due to the fact that we're looking at about a $14 million general fund increase in contribution. But if you'll remember, that Stan Serra did mitigate the county's contribution in 2010-11 with a $20 million offset, 10 of which applied to the county's general fund. So this actually anticipates that we won't get the 10. We'll see an additional $4 million. But if we get the $6 million, that $14 million will drop to an $8 million additional contribution, an amount greater than the current fiscal year. So we're looking at a minimum $8 million increase up to $14 million if we do not get the mitigation.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Any additional question? If not, I'll turn it to the public. Any questions from the public this time? If there are no concerns, I'll bring it back to the board.
I would ask the board, when you consider an action, that you would take items, recommendations 1 through 11, and then you can do it in the same motion, but also specifically state recommendation 12, as that is an add-on in the recommendations for this morning. And recommendation 12, to refresh your memory, is to approve an effective date of April 23rd, 2011 for the downward reclassification of a confidential assistant 4 position, manager 2 position, and manager 3 position in the chief executive office.
So you're asking for recommendation 10 plus 12?
I would ask for all of the recommendations plus specifically to add recommendation 12.
Anyone wish to make a motion or comment?
Well, just a comment before, you know, we get into the voting on this. This is a pretty austere budget. And you can see that the county has for some time been cutting staff and salaries. You know, we furloughed everybody. We've cut every salary 5%. We've reduced retirement for new hires. And, you know, 1,000 people have been eliminated from the county, and we're not done yet. One disturbing thing is that the state of California has really not cut anything yet, except for coffee cups and cell phones. I don't see anything that the state of California has done. And the cities and the counties, in particular, are just barely getting by. We're just going to continue to see reduced services in the future. And I would like to see the state of California start taking some of the cuts themselves instead of just talking about tax increases. They ought to start cleaning up their house and reducing their staff and programs and become a little bit more business friendly. We're only going to be able to grow our way out of this. We cut. You can't raise taxes enough to cover all these cuts. And the only way I see that California is ever going to get out of this is to become more business friendly and grow our way out of it. We've got the next few years are really going to be hard here. There's no way around it. It doesn't look like we're done with cutting yet. You know, Stan Serra doesn't put over that $6 million from unallocated reserves to the county. We've even got more substantial cuts that we're going to have to take later on.
Supervisor O'Brien.
When we first started seeing this recession come, we knew it was going to be, bad. That's why we looked at a 3-year option of spending $24 million on trying to bridge the gap, which wasn't nearly enough. And now we're sitting out looking 3 more years on how to fund that gap, and it's getting worse. We had a perfect storm hit us between retirement, between sales tax revenue decline and property tax decline. It was a perfect storm, and we're doing our best to weather through it. But we have to live within our means, and we know that. I received a pretty passionate email from an employee who's one of the 16 people today who begged and pleaded that we relook at that specific job. And just for that employee who sent me that email, which I don't know names, we did look at that, and it's still the recommendation to reduce that position. And I just want to tell, again, our employees who we've reduced in force, that we apologize for what we're doing. We have very limited choices as we look at the budget. We know the effects that we are taking on you and your family. And the choices as we get into this, now 987 positions lost, the decisions aren't good. We can make a logical argument of why we shouldn't do a reduction in force, and we know that. There's perfect logic that says you shouldn't do this. But just like in your own checking account at home, you have no option. You have to live with the money that's in the account. Now, the first
600 jobs or so that we cut. The public really didn't notice a whole lot of reduced services. But the last couple hundred people are really going to notice a reduction in service levels from the county, which makes, as we fight over each one of these additional job cuts that we're going to do, it's going to be tougher and tougher. And I fully expect and predict that there'll be disagreements on what we should cut. As we look at what our core responsibilities are of county government, we have some tough decisions and we'll have disagreements. And I think it's important to debate the issues here in this boardroom, in which I will today. Code enforcement, to me, is important. I know it's going to take cuts, but practically killing off the program doesn't make sense to me. We're spending $232,247 as proposed in next year's budget. And I think we just need to redefine government and reevaluate how we're going to do that. We're moving very fast on a lot of cuts, and that's because the environment changes faster and we can react. But I think it takes debate, and I think it takes that redefining government and think outside of the box. And when it comes time for the budget hearings, I plan to have a lot of out-of-the-box ideas and suggestions. I'll remind the budget staff my first year here with my post-it notes. It may be that again, where, hey, why are we doing it this way? Have we ever thought about other ways of providing some sort of level of service? And I think that's important for the five of us to make sure the public understands and set the now lower level of service that we're going to be able to provide. It's unfortunately that bar gets lower and lower. And it's unfortunate, but it's living within the budget that we have. So I do support 11 of the 12 staff recommendations. I don't support as deep of cuts in code enforcement as proposed.
I would like to make a comment at this time. I would like to commend those who have been working on this budget. You've taken on your responsibility, and as difficult as it's been and will continue to be, I believe that our community has, we've addressed it with sensitivity. Now, those who perhaps will not have a job, they may not feel that we've done it with sensitivity, but everyone is aware of what's entailed when someone is let go. It's not just the individual. So there may be some very hard feeling, but a great deal of sensitivity and responsibility that we're asked to perform, and I'm going to be very candid. If we can't address the responsibility that's presented to us, we don't belong here. And that doesn't make it any easier, but it does address the responsibility that each and every board member has taken in stepping up and trying to address this ever-going saga of finances. And it isn't over. With that, does anyone else have a comment?
I'm going to jump in here real quick.
Okay.
As the new guy here, as bad as this is, I guess I'll be the positive voice here that we're going to hear. As bad as things are, we're going to get through this, and it's going to be better. We're going to find ways, like Supervisor O'Brien says here, to look at things differently, to go outside the box and come up with new ways to restructure, fundamental restructures of how government works, which is, I think, a lot of the things we're doing here. And we're going to come out of this stronger than we were coming into it. So, not being the voice of doom, I know everybody we've talked about here all how bad things are, but we are going to get through this thing, and we're going to get through it with, as a result of being put in this place, we're going to come out stronger when it's all said and done. So I want everybody at least to know that this will get better, and everything that we're doing here is gonna make it better. And like I said, we'll be stronger when we get through this. And I appreciate staff. As I've gotten to know everyone here, there is just a lot of hard work that's being done by everybody, and a lot of things that are going on in this county that's not happened anywhere in the state. And so, for what that's worth, it is going to get better, and just everybody's got to hang in here, and we're going to find out ways to make it better. So,
if there's no other comments, I would like to make a motion that we accept the recommendations, including 12. I so move. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Okay, it's passed. 4-1.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would ask Supervisor O'Brien, do you want to vote no just on the one issue relating to the...
That was my preference, but that's not what the motion was. I oppose recommendation number 8 is the... And if the chair would allow me the... Good. Allow my vote to reflect that, that would be great.
Okay, well,
great. Thank you.
The clerk will take care of that.
Okay.
We'll use the same motion. We'll have two motions.
At this time, we'll go through correspondence.
This board has received a copy of the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District's 2010 annual report.
Acknowledge receipt of report.
This board has received a notice regarding the planning of the future of the Altamont Corridor Rail Project meetings.
Referred to the High Speed Rail Committee.
This board has received notices from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding proposed regulatory action relating to Central Valley sport fishing and to mammal hunting.
Referred to Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a notice from the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District regarding a workshop on potential valley response to peak ozone date.
Referred to the Department of Environmental Resources.
And this board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Okay, acknowledge receipt of claim and refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. And at this time, we will see, does the board, any board of supervisors have a report?
Mr. Chairman, there's sure. Two items on correspondence today that have to deal with the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District. One is a question for the board. That district wants to come to this board and make a presentation on, I would assume, the annual report, and just want to know if you're interested in it. I can give you the brief 20-second update on what it is. It's our air is continually to get better, yet the standards are continually to get stricter, which forces us further out of compliance. And that's the 20-second year-end annual report. They wish to come and make a 10 or 15 minute presentation, so that's something for you to decide. And the second is something that I pushed for, one of the things I pushed for in the Air District, and that is during the summertime we used to have something called Spare the Air, kind of a tell the public that today's a bad air day and help us reduce pollution today. We do it on the winter time. We check before you burn. We tell you what days they're bad and not to burn in your fireplace. And so I pushed for some sort of Spare the Air types concept program during the summertime so that we can notify the public that there's a bad air day coming. And that's direct correlation with the $29 million fine that we had to impose this last year. We were able to predict that we were going to be out of compliance, yet we did nothing to tell the public that this bad air day was coming, and it cost us $29 million that was passed on to the residents of this air district. And so this is the item number 4 in correspondence, is their attempt to start up a program so that we can have better notifications to the public, so that we can, as we predict bad air days, public can be made aware of it and hopefully make some better choices on their polluting actions.
Thank you. Supervisor Withrow?
No, that was from before.
You're okay. Supervisor DeMartini?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that I went out with the in-home supportive services fraud unit last week for the third time. And what I found there was substantial discrepancies between what the people on this program were claiming and what actually was the case. We found exaggerated disabilities, people lying about the amount of people that were living in their house, and also about their income. We went to five different houses, and all five had problems. And four of them were eliminated from the program that day. And the other one other guy was being videotaped as he claimed he couldn't get out of bed without help. And he was out in the yard unloading stuff out of a pickup, apparently no problem. Now, I don't mind paying for people that really need the help. That's what the program is for. But this fraud unit is important because what we've uncovered in the three visits that I've taken out there are going to result in substantial savings to the county and to the state. These investigations are taped and recorded. And any accusations of improper conduct by the investigator, rudeness, or whatever it is they come up with are completely unfounded because everything is recorded. Because I got one report that I was out with the investigator that, you know, the people coming into the house, and I was one of them, were just rude and abusive. And I remember this particular visit. I didn't even say a word to the person. I was just there observing. So anyway, this unit is important. I want to be sure that this the funding for this thing continues so that the people who do need the services get them. But the people that are exaggerating their disabilities are eliminated from the program for good.
Supervisor Chiesa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to report out on Turlock City Government Night that we had last Thursday night. Supervisor Withrow came. Thank you very much. We had Congressman Jeff Denham, Assemblyman Bill Berryhill, and Senator Canella on a panel talking with the folks about, and there were mostly questions from the audience. It went over fairly well. I wanted to thank the city of Turlock that did a great job of hosting the event along with us, providing the venue. Looked fantastic. Jennifer Carlson, my field rep, who did a ton of work, and David Jones from the county. It is, you know, we had a packed house, and I think I said last night there's a hunger for knowledge. There really is out there. People want to be informed. It's very difficult to get the venue because of, you know, staffing levels. Thank goodness we had a lot of volunteers. But the people want to hear from us, and I think we heard that in the comments from the board that we need to do a better job, all of us, and that's from the state and the federal government, the local, the cities, the special districts. We need to try and do a better job of talking to our constituents and being honest about where we are and as for providing services. And today was sober is the only word I can ever come up with. It's a sobering reminder that, you know, probably the worst is yet to come. But I know the people appreciate it. I've got a lot of positive comments. And you know, I'm going to try and do this in the district in Houston on a much smaller scale. But it's useful. It's definitely useful. So, again, thank you to Jennifer and David and the city of Turlock for helping put that event on.
Okay, legislative physical management report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, we are nearing the deadline for realignment proposals to come together and a determination by the administration and the legislature whether we will have a ballot measure to extend funding sources for critical programs throughout the state. We're pretty much in a wait-and-see mode right now. Our associations are actively tracking and involved in the development of the realignment proposal. There is a constitutional amendment that is being considered now to put in place some safeguards and some protections. Have not had a chance to take a look at it, but it we are reaching now a critical point in the realignment discussions. Hopefully in the next 3 to 4 weeks we'll have a very clear idea of what the opportunities and what the risks are of the proposals that are being presented by the governor and amended by the legislature.
Now this board is sitting in Stanislaus County In-Home Supportive Service Public Authority, and I call this meeting to order. And I now ask on the consent calendar if someone makes a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? It's been passed. Correspondence is none. Public hearing is none. Agenda items is none. And public forum, is there anyone who has a comment? Please come up, Mr.
Good morning. Chairman, Board of Supervisors, I just want to be clear that I don't think that the United Domestic Workers Union stands here defending fraud. We definitely do not. Fraud exists in every program. And what we have challenged is the process in which the investigations were being conducted. And if anyone that really knows and really understands how these investigations initially started and where they are now, totally different. A different approach by those conducting the investigations. We have not had the amount of concerns about the intimidation and harassment that we did initially. So to stand there, to sit there, and to make an assumption or to make it seem that things are business as usual with the fraud unit is totally false. They are not. They are being conducted in a more professional manner. But I want to be very clear that we do not stand here defending fraud. Never have, never will. There are many people that utilize this program who are in desperate need of it. We will defend them. Thank you.
Excuse me, would you give your name for the record, please?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Mike Losa, staff member with the United Domestic Workers Union.
Thank you very much. Are there any other comments?
Can I respond? Can I?
Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Rosa, and I think I've been very clear that there's a lot of need in the community, and it's been our assumption all along that rooting out fraud should be all of our duties. And I think, maybe we are doing a better job, but I'm glad to hear that you think we're doing a better job in our fraud investigative unit. It is priority number one to make sure those that need it most have it available as long as the program is in existence. And we've always seen a problem, and we can argue about the numbers, but it exists. And if you're on the same page, if the United Domestic Workers agree that fraud is not good, and the Stanislaus County agrees, and we can get the fraud investigators to do a good job, then we're all going to be better off in the end. And so I appreciate those comments.
I now adjourn this meeting and go back to the board. And at this time, I'll adjourn, and we'll have a closed session. Board.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session to have a conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A. This involves one case, Valene Sarmis versus County of Stanislaus et al., United States District Court, Eastern District of California, case number 109CV01333, LJO DLB. We do not expect a report out of this matter.